Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Broadway Breakdown. I am part one of your hosts, Matt Koplik.
And I'm like the tiniest, most minute part of your other host, John Miscavige.
It's true. He's like under a baseball cap. He's in a billowy blue shirt. Why are you hiding, John?
I'm trying to disappear today. Today's a really shitty day.
Yeah.
It's not just the weather. The weather definitely does not help today. But today is just one of those sad, depressing days. I was actually just writing a memo on my phone that was just... So I got caught on the train for like an hour and a half when it was only supposed to be about 40 minutes, and I missed therapy, so I had to cancel therapy. So I was ready to divulge a lot of emotional, baggagey things today, and then that just never happened.
So this is going to be a good episode.
I might cry today. Like, I honestly don't know. Like, this could be our Emmy episode.
Do podcasts get Emmys?
They do now.
It'll be our Grammy episode.
Yes.
Or Toonsy. I don't know. Like the iTunes Awards.
The potties.
The potties. No.
I was writing this little memo to myself because I didn't know what to do. I got here super early.
Yeah.
I mean, to give you a basis of comparison or kind of symbolic little nod to like how my day is going. I went to Ripley Greer for no reason. I walked into Ripley Greer and I stayed there for a little bit because I just felt so lost. For those of you who don't know, Ripley Greer is an audition studio. Read my article.
I was gonna say John made it rather famous.
Plug. No, but if you so. I just wandered there. I, of course, pooped, because what else do you do in an audition studio in New York?
The number of times I've had incredible poops at Ripley Greer, just due to pure nerves.
Yeah, and so I took a depressed poop, and today's just a crap of a day. It just is.
Well, so this is the moment where we turn it the fuck around.
Well, that's what the memo was about. I was trying to, like, write everything. Fuck, stop saying like, John.
I said like so many times in our last episode. I was editing it and I went, God damn it, Matt, choose your words better.
I felt as if I had been doing okay for a couple episodes. But I'm also, my sugar's low right now. I can feel it. And I think it's just my crutch. But I was writing this memo and I was writing down all the things that I was feeling and everything that I was frustrated about today, that I've been frustrated about this week, that I was frustrated, stupid things too. And then also one of my friends has been having maybe one of the worst possible 2018s that anyone could have. They truly have had the Job from the Bible of years, any kind of awful, horrific thing you could think of happening to them and their friends and their family. Just times that by 10 and that's what's happening. And so it's crazy because then I was writing all these things down and just trying to think about how lucky I am in comparison, but then I felt guilty and it's just that never-ending, God, life is hard.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't count if it's easy.
I guess not. I don't know. Sitcoms lied to us.
Oh, absolutely. Fuller House lies to me every day. And I'm lying right now. I've actually never watched Fuller House. But
that's a plus.
Well, that's something that I actually was thinking to myself this morning, because last episode we talked about Happiness Project and me, you know, doing some compartmentalizing for my life.
Yeah.
And there were, like, literally 2 days after that, my life got very crazy, hectic, and derailed for a little bit for about 2 or 3 days. And I've now been trying to get my project back on course, and it's hard. And I've said to myself, it's so much easier to be happy about this stuff when it is easy. When it's difficult, that's when you really kind of have to commit to it. Yeah. Yesterday was sort of the first day that I felt sort of back on track. Today feels a bit like a test, but I'm persevering, and I'm here with you, and that checks off one of my boxes for the day, so
yes.
I feel good. Yes.
One of the things that I was writing down, though, is it's just so crazy how quickly emotions can shift, or I had such a wonderful day yesterday in so many different mm-hmm. ways, and I felt so hashtag fulfilled and blessed, and I was so joyful, and I just genuinely happy. And then today I just feel so genuinely sad, and it's just so crazy about how your emotions can go from one extreme to the other. Hey, maybe it's bipolar. Hey, therapy. But I also, the thing that I was thinking about when, and I was writing down was, I get so frustrated because in these moments of sadness or when I start feeling low or when I start feeling just when things start feeling out of my control and I feel very bogged down by this, by the outside circumstances, it's just that, I don't know about you, but I just feel like all those happy moments just never existed, and I'll never be happy again. And I think that's what I just get so frustrated about, because I was writing this note of just depression and what I'm feeling, and like feeling anxious and that I couldn't breathe. And literally nary 12 hours ago, I was on 9th Avenue with a margarita in hand being like, yes, queen, blah, 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 blah. And like, I'm not, well, no, I actually wasn't drunk. I had like,
No, that's you at 9 a.m. on a good day.
Well,
yeah,
right. That's the joyful part of me that I love to celebrate. And I guess over the years I've learned to celebrate this other side of me too more. But then I hate him because I just feel like he's not as fun or as funny.
No, but he's healthy for you.
Is he?
a little bit. Yeah. It is actually really interesting how hard it is to remember happy memories when you are sad or depressed.
Yeah.
It really. You just can't. Everything seems terrible.
Yeah.
And something that Gretchen Rubin talks about is forcing yourself to act happy when you aren't happy. Because eventually you start to release some of the anger and some of the pain, or as Mr. Rogers calls it, the mad that you feel.
Oh.
What do you do with the mad that you feel? And
that man was a genius.
He was my first boyfriend, and no other man will ever compare to him. But that's not about five-year-old
okay.
me. That's not about five-year-old me.
Five-year-old you sexualizing Mr. Rogers.
It was not sexual. It was literally was I wanted to marry him and just like keep house. I didn't want to do anything
like
sexual.
Once a week. I mean, it's still a marriage.
Yeah, sure. I mean, those cardigans, baby.
It's such a good feeling to know you're alive. It's such a happy feeling. You're growing inside, and when you wake up ready to say, I think I'll make a snappy new day.
It's such this a all good brings us to theater.
John, the thing that makes us the happiest and the most depressed.
Yes. Oh, God. It's like the color purple in 90 seconds. John has seen some theater this week.
I did see some theater this week.
Tell us about the theater you saw, John.
Yeah, well, it actually, the first show that I saw this week kind of parallels nicely to what I'm feeling and what we were talking about. I saw at Playwrights Horizons a new Craig Lucas show entitled I Was Most Alive With You. It's very interesting. I purposely did not read a lot before going to see it. I knew kind of some of the basics about, I guess, more of the not technical side of the show, but I knew that there were two casts. I know that there was a cast that was an ASL cast, and then a cast that was, you know, going to be the speaking cast. And I was very excited about it, and then right before the show, I was peeing, because I'm getting nervous pee. I pee at least 3 times before every show.
Yeah, you're 90. We have established this.
It's so fun, too, because it's always all the 90-year-olds and me who sit down and then go up to the usher and go, I'll be right back, I gotta pee. I get grouped into them so quickly. But in the year, and where I was peeing at the urinal, there was a little poster that kind of was a painting of a depiction of the story of Job from the Bible. Are you familiar?
I am quite familiar, actually. I used to go to Hebrew school.
Yes, you did.
I did.
Good for you.
I don't remember anything about it, except I did ace the week that we talked about Joseph, because I knew that story inside and out.
So proud of you. So proud.
Thanks, Mom.
But it's... So what this little poster told me was that Craig Lucas was inspired by the story of Job from the Bible. If you don't know the story of Job from the Bible, basically it is a man who was a follower of God, a follower of Christianity, and Satan comes to God and makes a deal or kind of a bet and says, hey, he only loves you because you treat him well. He's not going to love you if you
take everything away from him.
If you take everything away from him or give him a hard life. And God, you know, this personification of God, this white man version of God that we view now in our day, was all, bitch, you think so? Well, let me try it. So he sent down just everything he could to Job, killed all of his family, took his job, his crops, his house.
Gave him diseases.
Yeah, gave him diseases. I mean, basically gave him a life of a 20-year-old gay in New York. And so
circa 1986.
Just devastating. Oh, yeah, true, actually.
Yeah.
But, and so I thought, oh, okay, so this is interesting. That's kind of going to be what this is about. The play itself is interesting. I really want to read the play because I then read the foreword by Craig Lewis before the show started, and the foreword was really beautiful. It honestly should just be like a part of the show because it's quite just thought-provoking and beautifully written and artistically expressed. But I will say that I have a theory that maybe the play you might get a little more if you read it than if you see it. So it's kind of a play on what happens to a modern family, not the modern family, not the TV show, but to a modern family of when everything that could go wrong does go wrong. And it does not hold back from it. It's quite sad. It's quite depressing. It follows a man who is a writer. I think we're led to believe that it's either a long-running TV show or a successful TV show. And he and his writing partner are trying to figure out their next project, and you're not exactly sure why. And then they start writing a script for this next project based off of everything that has happened in their lives the last couple months, which include this man's deaf gay son falling in love with a ex-Muslim gay alcoholic prostitute.
Sure.
Sure. We've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a nickel.
Exactly.
They are going to Thanksgiving at his mother's house with his alcoholic wife, who does not love him anymore, who thinks that he and his female writing partner are having an affair. At this party, just everything that goes wrong, or that could go wrong, does. The matriarch of the family, the grandmother, announces that she has terminal cancer and can no longer fund the TV show. The gay son gets in a fight with his prostitute boyfriend. They leave.
He's a prostitute too?
Yeah. I mentioned that. But
did you?
I did. I definitely said the Muslim prostitute alcoholic.
Oh, the prostitute got lost in all the other bus first.
Exactly. And after they leave, after having a fight, you find out that they're in a car accident where the gay deaf son... he himself is a recovering alcoholic. Mm-hmm. Sorry, forgot to mention that. He loses one of his hands, and so he can no longer sign completely. I'm skipping a lot of things.
Sure.
So it is not a laugh riot farce. All that being said, it is quite beautiful. There are so many beautifully acted moments, so many beautiful, just really heartbreaking or kind of moments that really kind of present the question of, what do we do when all these awful things, when I'm feeling my worst, when I'm feeling low, what is the next chapter that you write? Mm-hmm. Or if you don't have control over what you write, can you live with the outcome?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really quite compelling. The performances were amazing. So much of the play I really, really loved. Probably my biggest critique would be that the shadow ASL actors were not really integrated. There were two levels of the set. One where it's an office, kind of an office that functions as every other like scene. So it could also be a living room. It could be a dining room. And then on top, there was kind of a balcony with, it kind of looked like a ton of scripts being were stored. So I'm not sure. But the ASL actors were completely confined to that second level. And so if you had to choose which one you were going to watch. Mm-hmm. And I will admit that it just felt like a huge loss opportunity, especially after shows like the previous Deaf West production of Spring Awakening, where the ASL was integrated so beautifully into a show that was not originally written to be a show for deaf actors or deaf characters or have ASL in it. I loved that production so much. And this one, it kept it so completely separate that it felt like a huge lost opportunity. And I'm imagining that was a directional choice. I'm not exactly sure why it was a directional choice. All that being said, really, really, really lovely show. If you can get your hands on a script, read it. Because I think this is its last week of its run. It was very interesting. I walked away from it and knowing that I really liked it. It was just a lot. It was a lot to think about. And it was. It got to a point in the play where you were just kind of hands on your head going, oh my God, please not another thing. Yeah. It was so much.
Did we talk last year when I was in LA, did we talk about this? I saw a play with Felicia Rashad that had a similar premise. It was called Heads of Passes, I think.
I don't know if we did.
It's the exact same inspiration, which is the Book of Job. Uh-huh. And it was done at the Public 2 years ago, I want to say, and they brought it to the Mark Taper.
This rings a bell, but yeah. I don't know if we talked about it.
I want to say we talked about it at least for like a second. But yeah, it was the playwright, it was the man who wrote the play that Moonlight is based off of. Black Men Look Blue in the Moonlight, something. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me that that's the actual title, but something like that.
Yeah.
And it's a very similar premise. No ASL, though. It's a woman who loses everything in like a night. And it starts with her birthday party at her house, and her husband had just passed away the year before. And she's got three children, I think, and then an adopted daughter. But the adopted daughter is on this like really terrible path, and she's coming in to town for like the night, and it's this whole big deal. And then there's this big storm that happens. The adopted daughter reveals that the dad who had just died the year before used to rape her. That's why I don't come here anymore, because like I don't like being in this house. And exactly.
Oh my gosh! Please take if you have not taken a Xanax yet, please take a Xanax.
Take
two.
But then on top of that, this giant hurricane comes in at the end of Act One and like breaks down the entire house. So Act Two is the ruins of this house in the giant puddle, and it's essentially a one-woman show for Felicia Rashad, because she like comes out of the rubble, and I guess like one of the adopted daughter like ran off when the hurricane happened, and the other like kids and one of the kids' spouses went to go get her, and they all died in a car crash on like while trying to reach each other. So she's just alone, and the last 40 minutes of the play are just her alone on stage in a giant monologue, trying to come to grips with her new reality, herself, and like what she knew and what she didn't know from the past. Like she's like, I never knew that he used to do that to her. Maybe I did. I think I did. I always did. I knew. And then she's like, but I still believe in God. And that's the end of the play. It was one of those plays where like the entire play was set up for those last 40 minutes. So I didn't like a thing about it until the last 40 minutes, because I'm sitting there going like you said, it's all like, oh God, another thing. Yeah. And another thing. Yeah, and another
just,
thing.
Yeah. It feels sometimes it feels abusive, I guess. You're just, oh my God.
But
my
now
gosh.
I want Tom Kitt to write a musical inspired of the Book of Job starring Alice Ripley.
Yeah.
Because I want to see Alice Ripley act all the things getting taken away from her and showing us that basic level of awe.
Yeah, it's so funny because.
The Book of Judy.
Yes, Book of Judy.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar.
Yeah, So that's what I saw to set off my depression of a week. Mm-hmm. What have you seen?
Well, I haven't seen any theater, but yesterday I treated myself to two things.
Oh, wait. I just remembered the voice memo that I sent you.
Oh, you did.
Do you have it?
I kept it. I hope it's still on my phone.
I don't even know what...
So John sent me a voice memo the other day. Oh, yeah. No, here it is. A voice memo the other day because his thoughts were too stream of conscious to just text it. He had to just audio it to me. And it was in regards to the title...
Of this podcast,
which I assumed he got because we like, okay, let's back up for a second. Flashback to like 15 months ago when like I reached out to John and said, hey, I think you and I could maybe like do a podcast that would be entertaining. Boy, was I wrong.
Right.
And
what a mistake.
And considering how scattered this podcast is, you would be baffled how many meetings John and I had to discuss what exactly it was we wanted to do with this podcast. Like, we had
truly
quite a few that went on for a while. So it's quite embarrassing that, like, it's now become...
We just fucking threw them out the window.
We did. After, like, episode three, we were like, fuck categories and...
Fuck form.
Oh, just that. Like, we... Whatever. We're gonna do whatever. Point is, we, like, talked about what it is we wanted to do, and it was gonna be, like, we would do these, like, audition breakdowns. We would also break down, like, Broadway tropes and, like, things that we saw and break them down into different subcategories. And then we also, like, would have our own, like, little mental breakdowns on the show. And John, I guess... I don't know if he forgot or what, but he just...
I don't know what... God knows.
I will play for you what John sent me on Friday at 10:49 p.m. I had just come home from work after a very long subway ride, and this really cheered me up.
Wait, I had to send you a voice memo because it's going to take me too long to type out, but I wanted to tell you that I realized today that our podcast title has two different meanings because it's like we're breaking down Broadway like bit by bit, like putting it together, and then we're also... I hate myself for that. And then we are also like the Broadway breakdown because we're like having an episode, like we're like, oh, I'm like breaking down, I'm crazy. So it's like having a breakdown. It's like a pun.
Listen, in my defense, I've never claimed to be smart. I've never claimed to be aware
of
what's going on at any moment. I've never claimed to understand words. Simple words.
If there is... The way that I always think of John is Mame. But not the character of Mame, the character of Vera. It's all going to get very specific right here, right now. In the scene after the opening number, when it's like the morning after this big party and Mame's hungover, and then you find out Vera's like still in the living room from the night before, and she's like, come on, Vera, we're going upstairs. And Vera goes, we're not upstairs.
Yeah.
That is John in a nutshell. We're not upstairs.
It definitely is me in a nutshell. I'm proud of me, though. I'm proud that it took me a year.
Yeah, a little over a year, actually.
Yeah.
So this is all to say how I treated myself. So, as I said before, I'm going to Disney World in about a month, and even though we've found a way, I'm going with a friend of mine and a couple of members of his family because they had extra space, and I was like, sure. We were going sort of like in the off season, so it's pretty cheap, but still like mama's on a budget.
Yeah.
So I went to go see A Star Is Born yesterday at a sensible 10:30 in the morning.
Mm.
It said 10 a.m., but once the trailers are over, it's 10:30.
Jesus Christ.
There were 8 trailers, and I'm not shitting you. 8. When I saw A Star Is Born, and then at night, I treated myself to some Domino's, some red wine, and an old school viewing of The Little Mermaid, which... I have to tell you right here, right now, just let me go on the record. Everyone who knows me knows I feel this way, but rewatching it after a long time, that movie holds up exceptionally well.
Yes, it does.
What no one really gets because, you know, BuzzFeed and Vulture love to use, like, buzzword headlines of, like, it's about a woman changing herself for a man.
Oh, is that what they're called, BuzzFeed?
I don't... I'm maybe. I hate you. The movie's truly about a father understanding that his daughter... does not want the life that he wants and is different than everyone else in his family, and accepting that and giving his, not his permission, but, you know, permission for lack of a better word, to let her go and do the, have the life that makes her happy.
Yeah.
Which in this case is a mermaid becoming a human. And Tyler, of course, Tyler walks into that exact moment. We talked about so many other fucking things. And the second I get on the Little Mermaid, Tyler walks back in the room. Tyler Miller and everybody, the person we plugged last week.
Hey.
Yeah. So I just wanted to give that little shout out to the Little Mermaid. People think it's always about that, but it's actually about family and sort of understanding the differences that you have with other members of your family.
I watched The Little Mermaid growing up twice every day. This is not an exaggeration.
I
would put it on two times a day growing up because it was my favorite movie. And I truly do think it's such a formative movie for me and mm-hmm. so many other people because it basically taught us how to be gay.
It really did.
It taught us how to mix. It taught us to find a Prince Eric. It taught us, when in doubt, find a drag queen and sell your voice to her for
she's,
legs.
Yeah, because she will fucking entrap you. I will say, rewatching it now that all the things I know about Jodie Benson, like what Crazy for You and Smile, I was like, the restraint this woman has right now as she's singing these songs, because like, bitch used to be able to belt up to like an E and an F. Like, she was a crazy high belter. And Howard Ashman was like, for this movie, I want you to mix everything. And she's like, really? You know I can belt really high. He's like, you're going to mix everything. And she does. She mixes everything. It's beautiful. Star is Born. So for those of you who haven't seen it or are not even familiar with the previous versions, I won't give away many spoilers. I will say, I had watched the Judy Garland Star is Born once when I was like 16.
Yeah, I've never seen any of them.
It's, well, the Judy Garland one is fucking long. It is like 3 hours and 15 minutes.
What?
And that is with cut. Like, so the story that goes with the Judy Garland one was that there was a working cut that was like 3 hours and 45 minutes. And they made some trims to it and it was like 3 hours and 20. And that was like what they premiered to critics, and that's what everybody's like, oh my god, this movie's a masterpiece.
Holy hell.
But Warner Brothers was like, this movie is 3 hours and 20 minutes, and like, we're not gone with the wind. Like, no. So they cut to like 2 hours and 45 without any approval from the director or the writer or anything. So like, these ginormous cuts from the movie that made no sense. And the story goes is like, that's what cost Judy Garland the Oscar, was because when that was the movie that like went out at the theaters, parts of it just didn't make any sense. And so, like major scenes of hers got cut. And then over time, footage was found. So now, like, there's an almost complete version out there. It's still missing, like, 5 or 10 minutes. But, like, a lot of footage has been found. And that's what we watch now. But it's still fucking long. It's a long-ass movie.
Yeah.
And then I never saw the Barbara Streisand one because, like, why would I?
I don't know.
It's also long. It looks stupid.
It does. It just looks stupid.
It does.
I'm so sorry.
No, it does.
I'm so sorry, Babs. I know you're listening.
I thought about watching it when the trailer for this one came out, for the Gaga one came out, and I was like, maybe I'll watch it. And I watched the trailer first to see if I'd be interested, and it just looked so bad. She looks bad. He looks bad. Everything about it looks terrible.
That's also the story. I know I've mentioned it on this podcast, but that's the movie where the famous Barbara Streisand quote of where her scene partner apologized to her because he felt that he was not giving enough to her in a scene to like bring her to the emotional state to make her cry.
Yeah.
And she turned to the director and goes, can you believe this guy? He thinks that whatever he's doing affects me at all. The gall. Like... So ever since hearing that, I just thought, no, I don't need to see that.
No,
plus that perm,
that fucking perm. I did read some info on the shooting of that movie, and basically everyone who worked on that movie hated Barbara Streisand. They were like, it was her absolute worst.
Yes. That's the other.
Yeah, Chris Christopherson, the director, they all like went on record to say she's fucking terrible.
Yep.
And like, God knows, I love her in terms of her talent. And this is actually going to transition later into kind of the poem story I have for today. But yeah, no desire to see the movie. So I did see this one with Gaga and Bradley Cooper.
Okay.
It is exceptionally good.
Yeah, that's what people say.
Yeah, the music is phenomenal. And they're both great. So like, even if the rest of the movie was only mediocre, it'd be worth it for that. It does follow the formula of the other, let's see, of the other Star is Borns pretty much to a T. Like, it hits all the major points that the other ones do as well. So if you do know Star is Born, there are not going to be many surprises for you in terms of the story. Like, you know how it's going to end.
Well, it's like the fourth time the movie's been remade. So.
Yeah, exactly. But like, every time they remake it, it always sort of feels like something's missing. I will say this is probably the closest they've ever gotten to getting it right.
Mm.
And part of the reason is they've really made her character a really strong character.
Mm.
You know, she's tough, she's gritty, she's independent, she's smart. And the
she's me.
She is you. She used to be you. She used to be yours. She used to be mine. And their chemistry is just phenomenal. And their scene work together is great. The last 30 seconds of the movie is what is going to win them at least 3 Oscars.
There's
a ton of music in it. Like there's at least a dozen songs, and sometimes they do the whole thing, sometimes they do half the thing. Shallow, of course, isn't like the highlight of the movie.
Everyone's flicking the bean over the Shallow.
Yeah, well, it's the Man That Got Away moment. La Vie en Rose is technically the Man That Got Away moment, but like in terms of highlights of the movie, like we think of the Judy Garland one, we think of Man That Got Away. We're always going to remember Shallow. It's just it's the way that it comes into the story, the way that they both sing it and act it, the way that it's shot is just.
And those
amazing.
Oh
no, it's absolutely phenomenal, and her acting is great because it's the whole idea is that she loves to perform, but performing her own songs is just a little too vulnerable for her. She's like, I don't want to be that exposed. Every time I try to do my own stuff, it gets spat back in my face, and he basically tricks her into singing it in front of a crowd of like thousands, and you sort of see she says originally she's not going to do it, and so he's like, great. I'm going to do it. So he goes to start singing, and something about hearing him sing her words makes her go on stage.
I love emotional manipulation.
Right?
That's what I thrive
off
of.
That's the whole movie. The movie goes on and on, and they have their plot lines, and it comes to this point in the end where Gaga has a big final number. And you think to yourself, like, she's great, it sounds great, it's a little too Hollywood-y, and then the last 30 seconds, gut punch. And I went, oh, they're like, if they don't at least win an Oscar for him or her or the song or the directing or the moment. Like, it's just...
I'm wondering what could happen in the last 30 seconds. Does she turn to Bradley Cooper and goes, I see dead people.
That's exactly what happens.
And everyone's been dead the whole time.
She shoots ping pong balls out of her vagina while singing, he supports you for he loves you. Mm-hmm. And Bradley Cooper is just naked. And you go...
Yeah.
It felt like a good movie to see for me at this moment. I wouldn't say it's feel good. There's some shit goes down. There is one shot that just like devastates you. It involves a garage and a dog. That's all I'll say.
No,
nothing happens to the dog. Nothing happens to the dog. But they're both involved in the scene. It's not, like, they are not the reason why the scene is devastating, but it just adds to it.
I'm just imagining a really dramatic scene now between a talking garage and a dog.
Well, just like when you told me about Call Me By Your Name and you just said a peach, I didn't know what was going to happen with the peach. I assumed...
Does the dog fuck the garage?
That's exactly what happens. And everyone in the theater goes, ooh, too much. They went there. Not since the red coat in Schindler's List. The scene... for the most part is implied, and then they like have
I'll see it. I'll text you. I'll send you a message a year from now once I get what's going on with the dog and the garage. I'll send you a voice memo.
I got it.
I'll go, my God,
the dog represents
me
and everything in my life. So speaking of temperamental bitches like Barbara Streisand, so Patti LuPone, as we all know, is doing Company in London.
Yes, and my friend just made her West End debut as Jenny last week.
Oh, really?
I'm so excited. Yeah, she's one of the female understudies, and she made her West End debut. It's amazing.
Good for her.
Yeah.
I've heard really great things about this production.
I have as well.
The one thing I've heard is that... Another 100 People doesn't super work right now, but that's just... Apparently, Marion Elliott is having it take place on 2 subway cars. Sure. Mm. You know, she's Marion Elliott. She did War Horse and Angels in America and Curious Incident. You knew she wasn't going to be satisfied with just a park bench.
No.
No, she needs, like, things.
Yeah.
But this is all to say, Patti LuPone did an interview in The Guardian, and it's quite typical Patty. I was telling John, for the most part, she doesn't say anything that you don't already know. Like, she's still not super close with Andrew Lloyd Webber. She and Glenn Close, they've technically buried the hatchet, but they're not friends, and she loves to remind people of that.
She and Glenn aren't close. No. You know?
No.
Do you get it?
But do you get it? I don't think you're going to get it for another year. You said it, and I still don't think you're going to get it.
I hope I get it.
God, I hope you get it. I hope you get it. Because I don't have another year.
I don't either. This is my swan song, this episode.
Yeah. This is our... Who has it? So I was going to say someone with the last name Swan, but Elizabeth Swan song.
This is my Miss Swan song?
Sure. I don't know.
Racially insensitive?
This is my Michelle Kwan Swan song.
Just read the damn thing, Matt.
Oh, hunty, I'm going to read it for filth. She mostly talks about just sort of like her diva temperament. And like, you know, everyone says diva because people aren't supposed to speak their minds. It's like, well, yeah, no one's telling you to lie, Patty. But sometimes, like, there's a thing called tact where, you know...
I dare you to say the word tact in front of Patty LuPone.
She would explode. Patty implode. You loved it. Well, so here's the thing. Lord knows I'm not on the Andrew Lloyd Webber train. I do love me some Evita, and like he's written some stuff that I enjoy.
Yeah, like the Andrew Lloyd like scooter.
Yeah.
Maybe the electronic scooter.
Yeah, or like, you know, I'm at the station, but I don't think I'm going to get on the train. I haven't even technically purchased the ticket, but I thought about it, but I don't think I ever truly will.
Yeah.
But he has never... gone on record to like shit talk her, which I give him at least a little bit of credit for. He knows he did wrong, and he just, because you know that it's come up, you know that people have asked him about it, and he's most likely just said like, I'd rather not talk about Patty, you know, I think that's just disrespectful.
Yeah,
anytime anyone brings up Andrew Lloyd Webber, Patty LuPone's like, oh honey, let me tell you. And I get it, you know, it sometimes you can't control what still hurts, but I think you can always control a little bit.
Mm. Wow, that's so true.
Yeah.
I didn't even need to go to therapy today.
No, bitch, I'm your therapist. I went to 5 therapists before the age of 13.
Did you really?
I did. Well, speaking of Little Mermaid, well, yeah, no. So you say you watch it twice a day, every day for a while. I wouldn't say I watched it twice a day. I watched it a lot, and I watched Beauty and the Beast a lot.
Well, yes.
And Wizard of Oz a lot. But what made my parents send me to therapy the first time was me recreating the Part of Your World's reprise on the rock a lot when I was a kid. Because, you know, she's on that rock doing Part of Your World.
So they just think that you were humping Ottomans?
No, they thought I had gender identity issues. Because I was like 3 or 4 and I was constantly acting out Ariel. And I was like, well, first of all, of course she's the lead. I want to play the lead.
Right.
And my parents had this bathtub where the one half was higher than the other. So it was perfect for that moment. And my parents just got very concerned. So that was the first therapist. And then after that, it just kind of spiraled. Yeah. So 5 therapists before the age of 13, you're welcome.
I'm so sorry to your parents. I'm so sorry, Danny.
That's fine. I feel great. I feel very at ease with myself. So maybe some of it rolled off. I don't know. I've become a therapist for all my friends and family. So
that's healthy.
Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't make me feel all alone. So anywho, 5 therapists. I don't know how we got to there. Patty LuPone, I'm your therapist today. That's how we got there.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't remember. You can't remember anything.
You can't control what still hurts, but
yes, that was
you
it.
Can. You know, have some restraint. And she doesn't really have that. She's sort of given up on that. She loves the fact that she's Patty.
Truth.
And one thing she talks about is, she has the quote that I love. The interview basically describes a sentence with Patty LuPone is like watching an elephant tiptoe through a china shop. Trying to watch Patty LuPone have restraint is like watching an elephant tiptoe through a china shop. You know there's the possibility that something won't break, but you're still super relieved when she gets to the end of the sentence and nothing's broken.
Sure.
Like it's still like it's always going to be a possibility that it won't break, but
yeah.
There's also the possibility that everything will completely shatter. Like she goes on record to say that Hal Prince is the cruelest director she's ever worked with.
Okay.
He's a brilliant stager, but a terrible director. They asked about her, Madonna. She goes, Madonna, ugh, but I can't really talk about Madonna. Madonna's Madonna. That's a direct quote. I'll leave it at that. And then she says
that... And this is new, this interview?
Yeah, this is brand new. And she casually says to some extremely famous person that it remains nameless, is mentally unstable. She says, don't print that. He once tried to sue me.
Well, I wonder why, Pats.
Yeah. She goes on record to say... she calls Andrew Lloyd Webber poor guy because, you know, he wants the same critical success that Stephen Sondheim gets, but he never gets it.
I am going to start a brand of tea that is Lipone brand tea. It only comes in one flavor, extra spicy tea.
Or you call Ativa, like Avita, but reverse it.
Or I guess Patti Lupone.
Yeah, Patti. It's Patti. Let's serve some Patti.
And
you have to serve it with some pate.
I mean, dragging the children.
Oh, absolutely. She had another one. Wait, where was it? Talked about the diva shit. They say someone asks about, you know, temperament. And, you know, she says, if you can't back up the temperament with talent, then, like, no one will bother. But if you can back it up, she says, she says something along the lines of being difficult. Why complain if someone can deliver?
Well,
and it's like, well,
because someone can deliver and still be an awful human being, Patty.
Yeah, ask.
Not calling you an awful human being at all, but I'm just saying to answer your question, girl.
Yeah, like ask Toni Collette and the Wild Party. you know, she reported Mandy Patinkin to Actors Equity like multiple times.
Wait, she did?
Yeah. Do you not know this story?
No.
Oh, serving some pat tea right here. So the Lacusa Wild Party,
yes,
not the Lipo,
the Broadway production.
The Broadway one with everyone you can ever name, who's
Toni Collette, Eartha Kitt,
Mandy Patinkin, Sally Murphy, Norm Lewis, all the amazing people, Brixney Morber, who closed us out last week. Mandy Patinkin was playing Burrs, the alcoholic, coke-fueled clown.
Yeah,
exactly. As you know from I Was at My Happiest When I Was With You. What was the name of the play again?
I Was Most Alive With You.
I'm sure there's an alcoholic, womanizing, abusive clown in that play at some point.
Basically.
Yeah, and he's, you know, super abusive and violent with everybody. He, you know, Mandy Patinkin is a method actor, which I always hate the term, but he's a method actor, which meant that in rehearsals and in previews, he was throwing shit, like, left and right to actors, which is one thing if, like, you're in a scene and you maybe want to change a bit of blocking that only affects you. But when it comes to, like, stage violence or
safety,
exactly, or like that whole show was on a turntable and was very intricately staged. If you change your staging spur of the moment, that fucks up Toni Collette. Like, that's also just dangerous. Like, scenery could collide with her.
Yeah.
And there was a preview where he spat in her face during a scene, and he like French kissed someone during a scene, and one night he tried to refuse to go on because he hated the lighting, and he was getting all up in his head. And Toni Collette reported him to Actors Equity multiple times, and they were in rehearsals once at some point, and they were doing a scene where they're supposed to be facing each other, and he just decided to like face out to the audience the entire time. First time she let it go, second time she's getting antsy, third time he did it, she goes, "What the fuck are you doing? I'm right here, look at me." Yeah, but Patty's great friends with Mandy Patinkin, so in her mind, if he can deliver, why complain?
Well, that's true. An evening with Patty LuPone and Mandy Patinkin. See, I actually never thought that his temperament was like that. I've never heard that.
I heard another story when he was in Secret Garden, and they were in tech. I think they were doing a cue-to-cue, and something went wrong, and one of the actresses in the ensemble was supposed to deliver him his cane in a scene transition, and something happened where she wasn't able to get there on time. And again, like, this is after a month and a half of rehearsals. They're in the middle of tech. Like, until that point, it had all gone right.
Right.
This one time, she wasn't able to get there on time, and he just rips into her. And he's like, "This is why I need my cane on time, blah, blah, blah." And to this actress's credit, she takes a beat, and she goes, "Mr. Patinkin, in the future, it'll behoove you to know that I simply play your maid. I'm not actually your maid."
Yes.
And she walked off stage.
Good for her.
And he apologized because she stood her ground.
Good for her.
Yeah. I want to know who it was, because whoever it was is my fucking hero.
Band.
Right? I was like, that is a great line. Stand your ground, motherfucking
I want to get that as a tattoo.
Yeah.
I
play your maid. I'm not actually your maid. It was a great moment. I love it. If someone can find Rebecca Luker and ask her who it was, that'd be great.
We're getting deep cut Mandy Patinkin tea today. I didn't know.
Mandy Patinkin. Manti?
Why are you trying to make me more depressed?
Yes,
I honestly don't know.
Getting further into the crevasse. Into your crevasse.
Oh my
it's
God.
Fine. Don't worry about it, John. It's okay. We're here for you.
The world is so sad.
It is. Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat?
No.
Wouldn't you think my collection's complete?
I hope not.
No. Yeah. So we've successfully talked about Mandy Patinkin tea, Patti LuPone tea. So in terms of this article, we kind of already got into it, but I did want to ask you, when it comes to that shit, like diva behavior shit, like, I know that I don't like it. I get the idea of, you know, if someone can deliver, that's phenomenal. But having been in work environments that are terrible, I don't like it, even if the person can deliver.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever necessarily been... I'm trying to think if I've ever been in a show with someone who was a downright nightmare to work with because they were a diva. I've definitely worked with my fair share of actors with some emotional problems that they have not dealt with, mm-hmm. that they then bring into a rehearsal room or that they then bring on stage. I mean, I honestly...
I'm not doing anything right now to make John act this way, by the way. He's just
it's
in
because
his head.
I'm giggling at myself.
He's in his
because
own
I'm
head.
Broken. Having emotional issues and being an actor can sometimes go hand in hand, you know what I mean? You know,
I know what you're talking about. I am fully developed and I'm healed.
Yeah, and so it's but we also diva behavior, we feed into it, we ate it. If you were doing a show with Patti LuPone and she did something like that to you, would you have the courage to tell her that you only play her maid? I don't know if I would. And I try to think of myself as a pretty strong-willed
yeah.
person who would stand up for themselves. But when someone that you've idolized for years pulls shit like that...
Yeah. When the cards are down, it's like,
yeah,
what you gonna do?
What would you do?
Which is why I idolized that actress even more who said that to Manny Patinkin.
Yeah.
Because, like, the cards were down and she did it.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
So I saw Waitress yesterday.
You did.
I did. I had previously seen Betsy Wolf as Jenna, and I caught up yesterday. Nicolette Robinson has been playing
yep.
Jenna recently, and so I could talk a bit about her, but there actually were some other lead cast changes this week. So I also saw, I want to say her name is Jenna Klingemann as Dawn. She just came from the tour. And I saw Alex Wise as Ogie. And I saw Broadway's newest sweetheart, Al Roker. as old Joe? I don't know.
Yeah.
The old guy.
The old guy who gives her the money.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is also the plot of Pretty Woman.
Yeah, Waitress is a really fun show because when I saw it last time, I was expecting to be really emotional when I listened to the music a good amount. Actually, I'm not going to lie. I listened to the music a lot.
It's a great score.
Yeah, I find that CD or the album, that CD, what the fuck? I'm like a 90s fan. I'm like, I listened to that CD in my Walkman.
Yeah.
But like, I listened to the album a good amount. It's just, the music is really great. I'm a Sarah Bareilles fan through and through. Jesse Mueller could read to me my test results that are telling me that I'm going to die, and I would still be like, another more.
Thank you.
But, yeah, the show started yesterday, and I was very much into it. Nicolette has a phenomenal voice.
Yeah, her voice is
phenomenal.
Beautiful.
Phenomenal voice. Her mix is very, very chesty. So a lot of times, I would say she even belted more than Jesse Mueller, which I did not expect.
Jesse didn't belt that much in the show.
She didn't. But Jesse also has that raspy voice mm-hmm. that kind of gives it more heart and
yeah.
earthiness to
feels
it.
Like it comes from the gut.
But yeah, and so I was enjoying the beginning, you know, just fine. Jenna Klingemann as Dawn was really wonderful. And I didn't. Have you heard about her story at all? My friend who's in the show just told me her story yesterday, and it's actually quite interesting. She is mostly a Shakespearean actress, comedian. She's only done straight plays up until this, and she was the reader for the tour auditions. And Diane Paulus turned to her and goes, "Hey, have you ever been seen for this show?" And she goes, "No, I don't sing." And she goes, "We can maybe work around that." And so, sure enough, she booked it, and she'd been playing Dawn on the tour. And she can sing. She definitely can. they add a couple moments where the ensemble kind of sweetens her vocals a little bit to give it a little more oomph, because When He Sees Me is a very difficult song
it's
to
hard.
Sing. But she was really, really, really wonderful. Alex Wise, national treasure. I hate him. I love him. He's can do no wrong. Just, I mean, that role is just, it's built to steal the show anyways.
Yeah.
And he does, and he's amazing, and I bow down. He's brilliant. Al Roker's really sweet.
Aww.
Al Roker's really, really sweet. And something about the mix of him and Nicolette. So, I was going through the show, and whereas the previous Jenna I had seen, I really loved her in the first act, and then in the second act, I was like, oh, okay, cool, you know, it's all fine. With Nicolette, I was like, okay, I'm feeling her, yeah, she's doing good. And then kind of from Bad Idea on, she just, like, puts her foot on the pedal, and I was a sobbing mess at Waitress yesterday.
Oh.
And... yeah, she used to be mine was really quite lovely, and her whole journey after giving birth is, yeah, I was like sob shaking a little bit in Waitress yesterday.
Aww.
I mean, that could also be the emotional place that I'm in, but I wasn't actually feeling really emotional yesterday. I was feeling quite dead, so I didn't go and think I was going to cry at all. But I also was seeing one of my dearest friends from childhood, growing up, Jessie Hooker Bailey. This is her second Broadway show. She's in the ensemble. She's the knocked up woman who's like, yeah. Knock knock, who's there?
Yeah.
And she understudies Dawn. And so I do tend to get emotional watching her on stage. But, yeah, there were a couple scenes with Al Roker and Nicolette Robinson that just tore my heart out, question mark. So
good for you, Al Roker.
Yeah, so it was really, really quite sweet. Waitress is still in good hands, y'all.
Al Roker broke her.
Yeah, buy the tickets. The tickets. Hurricane Al Roker. Sweeping up your hearts. And
that's nice to hear. I love the movie Waitress that it's based on.
I've never seen it.
It's really good. It's
it's the girl from Felicity. It's Felicity, right?
Carrie Russell?
Yeah, Felicity.
Yes.
Felicity.
Carrie Russell.
Yeah,
National treasure Carrie Russell. Also, many time Emmy nominee for The Americans, and will be seen on Broadway this year in Burn This with Adam Driver.
Oh.
Yeah. Unclear what theater yet, but it's coming, so that's very exciting.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to see her, because I think she's so great. There was a toughness to Carrie Russell as Jenna that I never felt Jessie Mueller had in the role. And, like, Jessie was wonderful, but one of the things about Carrie Russell in the movie was that it was very easy to root for her and know that she was going to turn out okay, because there was a grit to her and sort of a strength that in the first half sort of felt like a shield to kind of keep her from falling apart in this terrible life she has. And then in the second half was a way to get herself out of it. And the movie, you know, had sort of a natural, we were talking about Craig Lucas, where it was sort of like a heightened naturalness or whatever. The movie is kind of like that, where it all feels very real and they all feel like very real characters, but there's a slightly heightened sense about it that can still make you laugh at some really uncomfortable moments. Whereas the musical, I do think it's a very good musical adaptation. I have some issues with the production itself, which I'll just say, like, I felt there were times when, in trying to reach that heightened realism, they kind of overshot it.
Yeah.
Most importantly, every time Jenna comes up with a pie.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think the staging is necessary, which is... I'll just say a shame, because as I said, I do think it's actually a really lovely musical, and I think if the production were just a little less busy, that would come out more. But it sounds like to me that with Nicolette Robinson and Al Roker, that musical is coming out a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that in the vein of Carrie Russell that she gives that she actually starts the show quite mousy and kind of weak.
Yeah.
But it's when she finds her strength that really kicks in, and it really comes from a place that was really quite moving. So yeah, it was beautiful. It was Waitress. Loved it.
Yeah.
Second time around, loved it. Still didn't get a pie, but the Canadian woman sitting next to me did, and I looked at it.
Well, that's the gay man diet.
Yeah.
She got food and I just looked at it.
Yeah, basically.
Mm. It's fine. I am currently in possession of a onesie that is way too big for me, so I feel
my
good.
My clothes are just so big for me. My little skinny skeleton body. It's hard to keep clothes on these bones.
thank you, John. That's what I was fishing for. No, like literally, it's two sizes too big. It's meant for someone who's like 6 feet tall. So I wear it so I can feel like I'm skinny.
Just you like are skinny. I'm you like are this. Skinny.
Well, thank you, but I like to feel more so. If I'm not feeling like Fosca in Passion, I don't want anyone to capture me in a photo or video.
I always feel like Fosca from Passion because she's kind of like a gargoyle of a human who just wants to be loved. Yeah. And if that's not me, I don't know what it is. I'm just creeping in the background, stalking all y'all's lives.
The first time I ever met John, he was clinging to somebody's leg going, love me.
That's so
love
true.
Love me or I'll die.
Yeah. And that is why I'm not allowed near Ryan Steele anymore.
Oh my, what's he up to?
Haunting my dreams. No, I think he's in a show. He's doing...
Aren't we all?
No.
Emotionally speaking, anyway?
I don't remember. One of those shows where the ensemble men are pretty.
Broadway?
Yeah.
They could do a Heavyweights the Musical, and the entire ensemble would just be Ryan Steeles and Max Claytons, and we'd be like, why? Oh. Like, well, on Broadway, this is considered fat.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that should be our next Jukebox That Musical. You are now, okay, I'm giving you the assignment now. Jukebox That Musical.
I'm going into rehearsal.
So, it's Heavyweights. So, you have a plot you can already deal with.
I don't know what Heavyweights is.
What?
I don't know.
Heavyweights is a 90s movie about a fat camp.
I didn't. Oh, that's the one with the blob.
Yeah, no, yes.
Yeah, when they jump into the blob,
yes,
that big
exactly.
thing in the lake.
Yes, and Ben Stiller's the new owner, and he's like really fucking insane.
Yeah. Okay.
Just like go on Wikipedia and look up the plot again. That is your new Jukebox That Musical. The song catalog must be... Give me a second.
Whitney Houston?
No, I want it to be harder than that.
I'm going to make you rue the day.
Willie Nelson.
I literally couldn't even name you a single Willie Nelson
Neither
song.
Neither could I. That's the benefit. You're going to listen to his songs and go, oh, I actually enjoy this one.
No, I'm not.
You don't know. You don't know what the future holds.
I'm going to do it with Kesha songs.
Great. That's even better. I changed my mind. Heavyweights with Kesha songs.
Perfect. You'll never hear from me again. This is my final episode of the podcast.
I changed my mind. Not Heavyweights. I want something more batshit. Birdman with the songs of Kesha.
All right.
I think there's something there.
I do too, actually. I could see something with that.
So, before you leave this podcast, everybody, the things to know. Being an asshole is not... being an artistic genius is not an excuse for being an asshole. If someone's playing your maid, don't treat them like a maid. Go see A Star Is Born. Rewatch The Little Mermaid. And sometimes going through multiple therapists before the age of 13 is good for you emotionally.
Sometimes.
Some people needed 5 therapists before 13 and didn't get them.
It's so true.
Like the person opposite me.
Dear God. They really should have gotten me in there on day one.
Yeah. Pop down and go, oh, no, this kid's going to need help.
Yeah, they should have known. But, yeah, I don't know what to sum up my lessons for the week. Sadness is real.
Yes. You can't control what still hurts.
Very true.
Except that now, everybody. I'm still devastated that Fun Home's no longer on Broadway.
Same.
But I've accepted it.
Yeah, I also... I'm going to try being happy today. And we'll see if that works. We'll check in.
I'm going to grab myself some Chipotle, and I think that's going to
help.
Oh,
my God. That's exactly what I'm going to do, too.
Yay. We'll text each other our burritos.
I'm getting tacos. But I'm actually going to the Lincoln Center Library right after this, and I'm watching the 1996 revival of Funny Thing Happened in the Way to the Forum.
Amazing. You got that all taken care of?
I did. I'm very excited. I've never watched one of the archival videos before, so very excited.
It is very interesting over there. Next podcast, we'll talk about it once you've been there. But
This is our last one together in the same place for a little while. So, yeah. Matt, I just want to take this moment to look directly in your eyes and say, I've never cared for you. I've never loved you.
Aw.
You make me so upset.
John, I want to take this moment to tell you that I hear you, I see you, and I respect you.
No, but I
don't like you. Not a single fucking bit.
To quote Pheromone, you don't love me. You don't love me.
And to quote Kennedy Davenport, fuck my drag.
Truth. On that note, we gotta go.
We do gotta go.
I gotta get food in my stomach. I gotta watch her revival.
Yes, you do. I'm very excited to hear your thoughts. Diva for the week. I have an idea, but I want to hear your thoughts.
Mandy Patinkin?
Nope. Wrong choice. Wrong choice second week in a row. So I'm taking over, and our diva for this week will be Jodie Benson.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
I'm debating if I want to do Mixie Jodie or Belty Jodie.
Still
Jodie Belty Benson. A giant mashup. Go from Heart of Your World into the end of Disneyland.
Actually, just don't even air this episode. Just make a mixtape of Jodie Benson's songs and air that.
I will.
Everyone would appreciate that so much more.
Just her and I Got Rhythm and Crazy for You. Ah! With her crazy-ass vibrato. All right. This has been Broadway Breakdown, everybody. I don't have any sign-ups, and John can't form words right now. He is literally convulsing with laughter.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Take us away, Jodie. Bye.
Maybe it's all fake. That's a chance I'll take. It's perfectly okay. Someone give me Disneyland. Take me near to Disneyland. And when I get to Disneyland, I'll stay.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.